do begin.
Hey, what is up, guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Social Primate Podcast. What is up? We're back for another episode, episode 98. Melina Aguilar from Te Quiero Más.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing, Melina?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. Thank you for joining me. I know if you know, my people are like, wait, I recognize this person. Like, yes, I had a mini interview, like, was it, like 2-3 weeks ago at the Sella Arts Fest for Shop City Champ, right? Yeah. So first of all, it was nice meeting you. The whole fact that you brought up that we had an episode with Evergreen Observer. I know you had them on your show a couple of, I think like sometime last year or something, right?
Yeah, I did interview them. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah, no, the great guys. Very fun. And again, that's kind of how you approached it. We kind of vibed and just kind of had a conversation.
I love how the way you said it is literally how like my brain like passing by. Because as a vendor, you don't really walk around events. So when I walked down, I was like, ooh, podcast. And then I was like, ooh, you interviewed so-and-so and I interviewed them. So yeah, that was my thought process. So it was really cool to like meet in person again, you know, because like podcasts are very virtual and stuff.
Exactly.
So to be like, oh my God, I can bug them really quick, you know. So that was cool.
It was definitely a really cool experience for me just, you know, in general. You know, it's not often that you see podcasts in these type of events. So whenever you do, it's like, oh, cool. You kind of have to stop by and see what's going on, you know. And luckily for me, that was my opportunity to kind of shine and just kind of, you know, engage the people there. But with that being said, give us a little bit of background with the your show, Te Quiero Más.
Yeah, Te Quiero Más is a radio show. It's all about like the 90s and early 2000s, and I think I'm very like nostalgic, just like, I don't know, I think it's also because I was a kid during the 90s and the early 2000s that I'm like remember it really fondly. But also like the programming, growing up with like Univision and like LATV and MTV Tres. Also, shout out Teddy in the building.
He's moving by my legs.
I know.
I forgot to shout out Teddy, man. He's gonna hate me.
Teddy in the building. That's my little like catchphrase in my show. But yeah, like I was obsessed, or I grew up watching that. And then like some, I don't know if people relate to it or if it's just me, like growing up, it kind of died down, like those types of programming that kind of embraced the duality of being like a Latinoamericano, you know? Like even like Sábado Gigante, or like, I don't know, like Control, or all the LATV shows, like Quiero Mis 15, what is it? Rock Dinner and stuff like that. I loved that growing up. And then eventually I was just like, what happened? You know, like it died down. And then in college, I was like a big procrastinator because I was like miserable. I was like undeclared for the longest. So during like times when I had to like study and stuff, I would look up like, whatever happened to this artist, you know, like... the artist that did that for me was Amandititita. Like, I don't know if you remember, she had this song, Te Crees La Muy.
Te Crees La Muy? No, I don't think I remember that.
And it was, I remember it for some reason, like, that's the one music video I remember a lot from, like, MTV Tres. It was just always playing. It was so funny to me. Like, the song is really sarcastic and really, really funny. Like, it's basically, like, oh, talking about this girl, like, oh, you think you're all that because you wear a mini skirt, you know. It was during the time of like Don Cheto too.
Don
like,
Cheto. See, like, I'm gonna play a little clip of it. What was the name of the song?
La Muy Muy. La Muy Muy.
La Muy Muy.
Yeah, like all this stuff I thought was cringy when I was little, and then now I'm like, oh my God, I missed that. And I think also had to do with being in UCLA, where it's like predominantly white, that I embraced that. I'm like, oh, I crave it so much, you know. So that's when I was really like diving into all that stuff. And I took, I minored because I was so miserable. Like I didn't like any of the classes I was taking. So I minored in music industries. And a lot of the classes, or one of the classes was like documentary. Like the whole final project was do a mini documentary on like anything music related, really. And so I took it as an opportunity to do it on like Kinky, because Amandititita's partner is a music producer, really big music producer, but he's in the band Kinky. So I discovered like bands as I kept like digging through that time period. And so yeah, if you want to play the clip.
Yeah, let me see, play a really quick clip for the audience here. They'll be like, what song is that? Let's see what we got. Okay, I recognize
it. Okay.
Let me see, two more seconds.
Te Do you remember?
Yeah, I do remember that. I actually remember the music video. I'm looking
at it. Yeah, see what I mean? Okay, so like these little things that live rent-free in your brain, like you just got to unlock them. But I remember like my all my professors were like white, and I like had this guy who didn't care, like those group projects where like no one does the work but you. So I did this project on this band named Kinky, and he was like, oh, Kinky Boots. And I was like, no. And he's like, the Kinks. And I was like, no, it's like Kinky. And then like he felt like his feedback, because it was supposed to be like you pitch this to like a producer because he worked in like that industry. And he gave me feedback and was like, oh, like this is too like niche. Like, this is, like, I would see this more for, like, Univision, like, Univision or Telemundo, like, not really, like, a broad audience. And that, like, it really, like, and I took that personally, like, you know, those memes. But, yeah, so I tried to apply to, like, UCLA Radio, and they all turned me down. Like, I was looking at, like, all the Latino, like, shows they had. It was just, like, one, and it was all, like, reggaeton. Like, and nothing wrong with that, you know, but I was just, like, oh, there's more out there that I feel like is not being highlighted. And I love, like, literally, like, my show tomorrow is going to be like old school reggaeton, but like I just feel like there's more stuff out there that we're missing out on. And so I sent you like the zine, which kind of explains how I got started with the show, which is like after I graduated from college, I just did like internship after internship at like small music labels. And eventually that like landed me a job at this small label called Cosmica Artist. And they also like hooked me up with a job at the Paramount venue back. Like this was right before the pandemic. Nice.
And in Boyle Heights, right?
In Boyle Heights. Yeah. So I was a ticket girl for a little bit. And when I was ticket girl, I was like, not that I was miserable, but I was just like really bored. Cause it's like once the show starts, you're just sitting there, you know? And so I would keep seeing people like pass by like every hour, like new people carrying like vinyl. They weren't going to the shows, they were just going to like a room behind like the little booth where I was set up in. And I was like, what's going on, you know? Like I was just like curious, like I'm just sitting here. And that's when I discovered like that's a radio station there. And my coworker at the time, Miguel, he was like really funny. He was like, yeah, like I have a radio show and I don't know what. And he's like, it's so hard to get in there. And I was like, oh, like that sounds so cool. Like I literally, that's like what? That's literally what I want to do. And then I met Joey, who was my coworker. Cause after the pandemic started, I transitioned over to do like social media for the venue instead. And he did social media for the pizza place that's in front called Brooklyn Avenue. So we became like besties, and he works directly with like the, what is it? Like chair of direct, what is it called? Like the main honcho.
Board of
Board
of like directors,
chair, yeah,
something high up there,
the boss. Okay.
The boss.
He's like her right hand. Shout out Carmelita. But he was like, dude, no problem, like there, like you have a show now. And I was like, so it was really cool. And that's how I started. He helped me with the name too, but it's inspired by like this band called Plastilina Mosh that's like really encompasses like you know, growing up with Latin music, but influences from like Anglo bands too. So in my brain, I hate when people are like, oh, they're like the, you know, Mexican blank, but they're like in the same realm as like Beastie Boys.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're really, really cool. And so, yeah, like Mosh Pit, you know, we were talking about that right now, but yeah, like that's how the show kind of started.
Ah, no, that's cool. I mean, it sounds like it's like, it just happened that you were just in the right place at the right time. And you're like, what the hell? This is what I've been chasing for.
You know? Yeah. At the moment, no, it doesn't really feel that way. Only like when you look back, you're like, oh my God, like it all like worked out. But during the time, there's like obviously like a lot of uncertainty. Like I didn't think getting the ticket job, like the pandemic would hit, you know, like.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think in hindsight, it does seem like really cool. Teddy's getting anxious.
He
wants to come. Let go of my leash. Yeah.
Let go of my leash. No, that's awesome. Again, it's a right time, you know, when you don't know it. Like you said, you don't know when it's happening, but when you look back, the pieces just fell into place. Now, with your show, at this point, you've been doing it for what, like 2 years?
For 2 years, yeah. It started off like, I think my first show was just like, oh, cumbia songs we might have forgotten about. Yeah. And then like, I don't know, I would, sometimes I would be like, oh, like it started off as like themes behind like music playlists, like, oh, I got a haircut today and my sister said I look like the guy from The Doors, so let's do a show of like hairy dudes, you know.
Okay.
So eventually though, it started, I realized that working at like music labels, I kind of got an understanding of like what the managers look like or like look for as far as like for their talents, like opportunities for press and stuff like that. So again, it was just putting two and two together, like, oh my god, like technically like I work for an outlet now, you know, like the BHAC, so I'm technically press now. Like, it's not technically like you are, but it's kind of like imposter syndrome too, you know. So I was like, oh, like let me reach out to these bands. So eventually it moved on from like a music show to like interviews. So if a band is coming into town, I'll like reach out to their management or their PR and just give them like a spiel, like, hi, like, you know, typically they say yes, because again, it goes back to like, we're always as Latinos, like put in niches, like, you know, like, I don't know, like, I don't want to shame like Nardwuar, but like, you're not going to see like Nardwuar interviewing like these up and coming like Latino bands, unless it's like, you know, like they're really popping, you know? So I feel like that's where I want it to do, like going back to all the programming I grew up with, like I want to see that again. But with artists that like either I know about, like I'm excited about personally, or that I know like they're my homies and I'm like, oh my God, they're so cool, you know? So yeah, that's, it transitioned over to doing more interviews, but still doing music. But yeah, like the interviews is kind of newish, but something I'm really excited about.
I mean, and if I'm correct, you started using a film, not a film camera, sorry, a camcorder to
Film
this, right?
I mean, yeah, I have a few. So I have like the old flip cams that were like for skateboarders. I have like a regular digital, like, what are they called? Like handheld camcorders?
I think they're called
Digicams. Like, I don't know. But then I also have like the film one, the Hi8 film.
Okay, yeah.
Video ones. And like, again, like these are like either thrifted, my friends were getting rid of them, and I was like, oh, it fits the bill, like, yeah, like 90s, but really there's like no budget behind anything. But
that's cool. I mean, the aesthetic you capture like perfectly, like you see it and you're like, damn, I'm thrown back into this time, you know.
Yeah, thank you. And the craziest thing I've noticed too, like people are like, other people who have shows like are starting to do it too. And I was like, okay, like I guess it's a vibe. But that's, yeah, like I guess in from an outsider's perspective it looks like cohesive, but it's really not. Like it's just like whatever I have, like let's run with it, you know.
Yeah, it makes it work. It looks like you're branding it without, I guess, really trying to brand it, you know. But you've already at this point make your, that's your aesthetic.
Yeah,
you know? So you said like right now you just gave me this playlist, this mix, and it, you know, it's a Burn CD that I remember doing these back in the 2000s and the 90s, you know, like, dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's the new, like, zine I dropped. And so it's kind of more like a picture, or part of it is like a photo zine with, like, photos or screen grabs of the interviews I've done with the artists that I've interviewed so far. And then there's a playlist, a Spotify playlist featuring those artists, and then a Burn CD, and then it had like so many ideas that it didn't work out, so it just ended up looking like a swap meet pirata like CD. But yeah, I had so many ideas for it, but it's like when you're done with something, you're just like, okay, there, I'm done. Like I'm not even gonna like think about it that much.
No, well, let's go, man. Again, you've embraced the culture. You've been trying to kind of like revive it in a sense, you know, to try to bring it to a new generation that didn't grow up with it, because I was there, you know, I lived through it. But it's cool that they, you know, there's a new a sense of appreciation for this, you know. Like I've even been to some like small flea markets or like little just art events where people also have like stuff that kind of relates to like 90s or 2000s, kind of like Y2K stuff.
Yeah,
and it's really cool, you know, that it's being brought back up or at least appreciated.
Yeah, and even like a few weeks ago at the Zine Fiesta, like my friend took her daughter, she's like 8 I think at this point, and like I had this like weird, not weird, but like a little activity that's like make your own paper CD player and like your own little mixtape. And she was so like, what is this? She was like, what? Like, I was like, dude, like, and I had one of the Burton CDs and I showed it to her. She's like, is that a DVD? And I was like, no, like there was no Spotify. Like, you know, I think it's crazy. Like, I don't think kids will grasp that, you know, like, growing up, like, going to Ritmo Latino.
Ooh, and, hey, yeah, I remember the one in HP. I used to go to the one in HP.
Me
yeah.
too. yeah, so sick.
That was a cool spot. I mean, look, I was a when I was younger, I was a air roquero, so I'll go to the all the way in the back. There was like this dark room you cross these beans. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, oh sorry, there's like ultraviolet lights and stuff, and I'm like, whoa, this place looks cool. Pictures of like the Ramones and Jim Morrison.
Yeah,
it was just a cool vibe, you know.
Did I imagine, or did it have like two floors?
I don't know. You know what? I think it did have two floors.
Yeah,
maybe.
I don't know.
Man, so no, actually, no, I don't think it did. I think it just had the hands outside, like the statues.
Oh,
like
the hands are still there.
They're still there.
Yeah. Well, someone stole like the bottom left one, but they're still on the.
I think one of them was like Celia Cruz or something.
Celia Cruz, Shakira, I think Ricky Martin. Yo, I'm obsessed. I know.
No, that's cool, Megan. You've embraced the culture and it's appreciated. And then at this point, you're just trying to like showcase these bands that a lot of the times they don't get attention, or not attention, but at least in the mainstream type of sense. Like, you know, it's if you're in the know, you know.
Yeah, that. And then I also feel like I'm not to be like a hater, but I'll see some interviews and I'm like, I can't believe they didn't ask this one question. Yeah. I wanted them to ask, you know. So part of it is that too. But I was thinking about it too, like in anticipation to this interview, like what is my goal when interviewing like artists, and like why do I pick them? And it's really just like, I don't know, I feel like when sometimes Latino artists are interviewed, it's kind of like the focus of the interview, the fact that they're Latino. And it's just like, I feel, not that I try to stay away from that, because sometimes I guess I will ask like certain kind of questions, but like I feel sometimes you just want to interview again in the same style as like a Nardwar interview. It's just like, I just want to get to know who this person is without like the layer of them being Latino being the main focus. Like, yeah, you just happen to be Latino like us, like, but also I just want to know, like, I don't know, like, what are you listening to right now? Or like, if it's a group band, like, I don't know, who's the funniest one of the group? You know, like questions like that. That's just like getting to know them as a person.
Yeah. Yeah. For the most part, stuff like that, he kind of humanizes it and kind of brings a connection outside of just like the musical aspect of it, you know? Because again, you listen to music, you don't really get to know much of the people who are creating the music. It's just the message that they're providing, unless you have an interview where you're like, hey, what do you like? You know, like not just like, hey, how did you get into music? But I mean, it's not a bad question either, but it's, you know, not, still.
Yeah, but I feel like it's like your typical questions. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll just sit there and think of like, because like, for example, like Amanitita is a person I recently interviewed. And for some reason, like she gets a lot of hate in Mexico because she's very like an activist. Like she takes a stand. And so she in Mexico she's targeted like that. Like, I don't know. It's very like harsh.
Yeah.
Or like they ask a lot of questions about her personal life, like being married to somebody else who's in the music industry, or her dad and stuff like that. But I just literally, like, a question that I really wanted to ask was like, you know, what's something that makes you feel like the muy muy, like one of your biggest songs, you know, and like stuff like that. That's just like, oh, like it's different. And like, I don't know, I'm genuinely interested, you know, like it's kind of silly too. So that's, I think, like, I don't know, if I'm really stuck on something, I'm just like, okay, let's make this silly, you know? Yeah, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's a good way to kind of bring it back too. You know, it's like those moments that if you add a little humor, and I think I heard this too with Arrogant Observer, it's like sometimes you just got to add humor to these things to kind of just make the moment a little bigger, you know? Or, you know, just, you know, bring it back.
Yeah, because sometimes I think artists, when I interview them, they're very like nervous, like, what the hell is she gonna ask me, you know? Or like, and then you ask them something funny and they're like, oh, like, dude, yeah. So, and I think, yeah, I think a lot of interviews are missing that too, like when I see some stuff. And that's like where I think I loved like Nardwar too. They'll take them out of their play, they're just like, huh, like what? So yeah, he's one of my biggest like inspos, as well as like is this running joke, Daisy Fuentes, who was this VJ in MTV during like the 90s, and like one of my biggest inspos as well. Because I feel like in the music, there's not like a lot of women in media, I guess, like in like the journalist aspect, or not that like at least Latinas, because she is like Latina. So yeah, it's like, I feel like I'm between those two. I'm just like toggling.
So what really inspired like the documentation of all this stuff? Like, it sounds like you just were inspired by the stuff that you were watching on TV, like the culture that you were growing up in, and this kind of helped build that thing to be like, I'm curious to document what's going on and find out more.
Yeah. So going back to like when I was in college and I was working on this project, because I took it really serious. Everything that was like music related, I took it super serious because I was like, oh, I want the professors to like me. I want them to like, I don't know, take me in as their intern, and then I'll become like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. So when I was researching for this like mock documentary, I came across this page called Rock Archivo LA. And it's run by a professor, not from UCLA, but from UCR. Or I don't know where he's teaching now. But he's been teaching at different colleges. But he has a page that's dedicated to like rock en español scene in LA. So he'll post like flyers, ticket stubs, live recordings of like shows that happened in LA, like pertaining to LA. And it's not just like the big shows, but like, you know, backyard ska shows that happen in Southgate, and then the connection between why is ska so big in like Southeast LA. And it's like, oh, well, the kids grew up going to band practice, so they were already playing like tubas and stuff and saxophones and stuff like that. So like after school they would get together with their friends who were already in punk bands, and then it, you know, like this ska scene happened. And so like he really, like for me at least, like I saw that and was like, oh my god, like that's really cool. And also like there's this band like Sol Estéreo from Argentina, and they only came to LA like 2 times, and they're huge like in Argentina. And so like there's like very little footage of them performing in LA, and it's just like insane. So with that like in my brain, I'm just like, wow, like if you think about it, like everyone records in their phones now, but like now, like, I don't know, like you post it on your stories or something, like, I don't know, I felt like, oh, I feel, and with the pandemic, it kind of happened where like we were all just like thinking like the worst case scenario. And it's just like, well, what if like the internet goes down one day, like all everything that's on streaming is gone. Like if you don't have a physical thing of it or like a documentation or archive, like what happens to it?
It's gone.
So that's when I really started thinking about like archiving and documenting and like posting stuff like that and having recordings or like proof, I guess, that like we exist out here. I don't know. I guess also I'm thinking of like in the future, if there's like another me out there who's just like, what was happening in the late 2010s, you know? And it's just like, oh, this band from Mexico came and like this one girl interviewed them right before their first LA performance. So, and this is what they had to say. Like, I don't know. I guess that's just me thinking like out loud, but like something about that, I was just like, if no one's going to do it, then let me be the person, you know? And not even in a narcissistic way of just like, I don't know, let me be the person, but it's just like, I don't know, let me just do it and see what happens. Like, it, even when I reach out for bands or interviews, it's just like, I don't know, let me see what happens. Like, sometimes I get no's, but when I get yes, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna take it serious. Again, like, in college, like, I'm gonna take it really serious because, like, you never know who these artists are gonna, like, go out and be, you know? Like, even with Arrogant Observer, you know, I interviewed them, and that was a great conversation, and now they're doing, like, amazing huge things with like Los Angeles Times, and it's just insane, you know? Like,
yes, it is. Now, so. I that's exactly what you're saying. I took notice of, I was like, damn, you know, it's first of all, consistency pays off, you know? Like you go after it, even when you say, when you get the no's, when you get the rejection, it's about, you just kind of keep going, you know? It's like, no matter where you start off, you're gonna have to start from ground zero and move forward and go through those phases, you know? And at least in your case, like you said, your goal is, or at least to leave something where somebody in the future will be like, hey, what was going on in this time frame? Well, we got Melina. Oh, what? The Quiero Más? You know, it's just one of those things that at that point, then it becomes part of their documentation and it ingrains your stuff more into the culture.
Yeah, I haven't even thought of it like too much that way either. But yeah, I think like there's a lot of bands that I'm just like, damn, like I didn't get the interview. And it'll be bands that'll like, it's their first time performing in LA. And I think the reason they say no is because they're like, I don't know, I don't have the followers. And I don't know, I just think they think LA is different or something. Like, and I feel like once they get to LA and notice like, damn, like it's not like Latin America. Like nobody knows is here. I think that's when it hits them. That's just like, oh, it's different. Like, I don't know. And not to like shame them or anything, but it's just like, yeah, like, I don't know. Like, no one's gonna ask you for an interview. Like,
yeah.
So that's when I'm just like, dude, like, even that's when I'm like, dude, I just want to talk. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not even about like the followers or the likes. Like, I just want to have it there, just to have it there. Just mm-hmm. like, it's cool. Like, I'm excited that you're here. And I feel like sometimes bands don't really see that. Like, they're just like, oh, you're not like KEXP or something, you know, you're not KCRW. And it's like, I know I'm not. That's the point. Like, you know, like,
exactly.
But yeah, that's like one of my biggest, like, oh, but I guess it's a little bit also like selfish, but it's just like, damn, like that would have been really cool.
Yeah, no, I've had my share of those too, where I'm just like, I want to get this person, you know, and it falls through, or sometimes it happens. But again, it's about just trying to shoot your shot. You know, I was just talking to the other guest right now, Elmer. I was telling him his whole journey has been just taking the chances of taking the risk and just asking or doing it, you know. And then that usually comes either one of two ways. You perceive, you know, you make progression in your career or whatever you're doing, or it's going to kind of put you on a hold with enough motivation to be like, okay, let me shift my stuff around and then find a balance that I can, you know, continue pushing myself as a artist, performer, a host, whatever it is, and then keep making connections.
Yeah.
Because that's all we can really do right now, you know, until we get to the point where somebody's like, oh, you are a KCRW status, you know, like, but that's the thing, you know, you want to get people who are kind of underdogs and then you want to have them on your show. Because, you know, one day maybe they get bigger, you know, and or vice versa. Maybe they're on your show and your show gets big and they're like, yeah, I wasn't the kid on my, you know, like it works both ways. Just about, you know, just being open to those. But it's hard.
Yeah, it's a challenge. Like sometimes, oh my God, it'll be such a blow to my ego. And it's like not even just to be like, oh, like, I don't know. Sometimes I'm just like, why? Like, I guess it's the whole, like, I don't want to be perceived. When I first started doing interviews, like, I would have to take long breaks, even after interviews I felt were good, because I was just like, oh, like, he said this comment. And, like, for example, like, my batteries died on the recorder, and one of the artists was, like, saying stuff in Spanish, thinking he, like, I didn't understand. Like, oh, like, she's so unprepared. And I was just like, like, I, like, sat with that for two weeks. Like, carry extra batteries.
Hey, I mean, that's how you learn, though,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, no, of course, but, like, yeah. And then, like, I was like, okay, I'm going to, like, interview my friends who are in bands for a little bit.
Okay. Just to kind of give you that confidence again, in a sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny, because going back to, real quick, shout out to Arrogant Observer, but when I did their podcast, we showed up, we recorded at a restaurant in Lynwood called, forgot. Oh, Jesus, dude. Got it. I need to stop. I'm going to pretend I'm in front of my son right now. Okay, we went into some taco spot or restaurant. I think it was called Balamb or something. But point is, we showed up. I show up. I forgot my interface to record.
Okay.
So Rolando, he was like, hey, I can drive off and pick it up. And I was like, dude, he went to his house. He brought the interface. He made everything happen. Otherwise, the podcast would have failed that day. But the whole idea was like, you know, he had the backup and I had to rely on somebody else's equipment to make sure my show happened. So it was embarrassing, you know, but it worked out at the end. But I've definitely been there where I'm like, I forget the batteries or cables. It's
like, yeah, I need like weeks to recover from stuff like that. Just like think about it and just like, okay, get over it. And then like hit somebody else up for an interview. But yeah, I feel that.
Yeah, no, it's a learning curves that you kind of have to put on. Mm-hmm. So yeah, now I carry batteries in my backpack, cables.
Yeah.
Like I'm loaded up for whatever happens, you know. But yeah, I mean, going back to your show, Te Quiero Más, I mean, what are your plans moving forward right now? Like I'm assuming you're still going to be doing like the video interviews and.
Yeah. Oh my God. I feel like after doing, again, going back to like, I need breaks when I do stuff, but I did the zine and I don't know, it was kind of like manic, like depressive for me because I did like the zine. I like rushed to finish it to meet like this zine fiesta deadline. And then, like, I just sat with it thinking about it because I feel like for the past 2 years, I've just been, like, go, go, go. Mm-hmm. And just, like, doing stuff, like, reaching out to people and then posting it the next day or, like, the next week. And then looking for another interview and doing it again. But, like, this zine forced me to sit down and go, like, who have I interviewed? How many interviews? Okay, let me get screen grabs from those interviews. Why have I never uploaded these videos? Like, what am I waiting for? Oh, yeah, like, what do I want, like, these videos to go? Do I want like an intro? Like, do I want to make it a whole show? So I feel like, and also like a lot of these, like there was a few bands where like, I interviewed them? Like, what the hell? Yeah. So it was really fun. And it forced me to like look back and like be proud of like my, like, what is it? Like progression. But also like, I really want to upload the videos to YouTube, but it's something that's so intimidating to me. Like, it's so scary. And like, I really want to do it. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's like in my head a lot, but I like really want to honor like people I look up to. So like, I want to make it like a vibe, like an MTV vibe, and make it like really professional. And also, I feel like there's people that are like, we've seen your clips, or like we've seen, or like someone who bought the zine, like, where can I see the like the videos that where the pictures are from? And I'm like, ooh, yeah, like
I bought that.
Yeah. So I feel like, oh my God, si me pongo las pilas, like by the end of the year, like that's what I really want to focus on. Editing, which is like, again, like intimidating for me, but like, yeah, editing the videos, uploading them on YouTube, because it's like a hefty amount at this point. I let it like get really bad. It's a lot.
Oh, I mean, the good thing, you have a lot of content, you know, because I mean, from my knowledge of that I've learned in the last couple of weeks, it's just, you know, you can make an hour conversation or 30 minute conversation into
a million reels.
Exactly. So it's like, all right, you got content for the next 3-4 months at least, you know? So that's one way to look at it. So hey, props. I'm gonna be looking forward to that YouTube channel, because up to now you've been uploading the stuff only on Instagram, right?
Yeah, like as reels, little clips that I was like, oh, that was informative, maybe like it'll catch people's attention for like the audio airing of it. But it's just like all the footage and audio from like the test cam has been sitting in my laptop. And I feel like this is also a call out if anyone wants to help me. Cause I'm like, I have like this whole idea in my head. Like, I want a jingle. I want like an intro song. Like, should every intro song be like a cover? Like, I don't know, a chiptune cover of the artist songs. I don't know. Like, I have a million ideas and I just need to sit down. But I'm sure you understand too. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work for one person.
Yes, it is.
And I feel like even just editing like a 1 minute reel would take me like hours, like 2 or 3 hours of like putting subtitles and stuff. And it's like, oh, my show's bilingual, should I add subtitles? Who's gonna put the subtitles? Like, oh, you could already, this is my thought process, and that's why it takes me forever.
Yeah, so. It's been, I mean, you know, we're in the same boat, you know. It's just a one-man show in terms of the, you know, looking for people, reaching out, like creating the content. So like, I know exactly where you're coming from. Personally, one thing that's helped me is just like the use of like AI tools.
Okay.
Like, that's just optimize my workflow like crazy. Like, I don't even have to edit anymore. Not that the audio doesn't sound good, but you can upload it to a website sometimes called Adobe Podcast, and you can legit be recording off of your phone from over here, and then optimizes the audio to make it sound like you're in front of a mic.
I feel like I use that for the subtitles, kind of.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there's Adobe and Podcast Enhance. Oh, there's cool. The captions app that I use to just do the transcripts. Sorry. No, Elmer was telling me about CapCut, so I'm going to look into that. It's kind of like a phone video editor.
Oh, cool.
So I've been learning a bunch of new apps and all this stuff just to kind of get the reels out for my podcast, because up until a few weeks ago, I wasn't doing any reels. It was just static posts, you know?
Yeah, I feel that. Yeah. No, I feel like I have like a list of people that I'm just like, oh, I need to save money to hit them up. Yeah. I can't even hit them up because what am I going to say? Like, oh, I want you, but I don't have money. Like,
yeah.
So yeah, that's my goal. Like, just like manifesting money and like a team of people that'll help me like bring this. I want to, like, I know it's probably bad, I don't even know like how YouTube works, but I want to like drop it all at once, like just have it there. I don't want to like release it like one per week or no, I just want to have like the first 2 years kind of out, kind of like, I don't know, like volume 1 and 2 of the Kiramash, and then focus about like whatever I want to do next. Because I also feel like once I drop that in my brain, for some reason, I'm just like, once I drop that, I feel people will know more of what I'm about, and it'll pick up like a new wave of like audience or something.
Of audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really good way to put it too, because I forgot where I heard this quote from, but I think it was actually from Tyler, the Creator. He was saying something about keep pushing your old content, regardless. Mm-hmm. Like, if it's been 3-4 years, like, it's content. And to somebody else who hasn't listened to it, it's brand new.
Yeah, it's probably wishful thinking for me. But I'm like, once I upload YouTube, like, that's a whole new world that, like, it's probably, like, I don't know. I really don't hope it flops. But, like, you know, I'm really, like, I'm going to put a lot of, like, energy behind uploading those videos. But, of course, there's, like, interviews or, like, concerts happening and artists coming to town, and I'm like, oh, it'd be great to like interview them. They're like way bigger like caliber. Mm-hmm. And like I feel like got some really big no's, unfortunately, this summer that kind of like were big blows to me.
Yeah.
But it would be cool to reach out. I think I'm a little hesitant for the rest of this year to reach out for interviews, just because I was just like, damn, those no. Some, like, I feel like some people are really respectful when they're just like, no,
yeah,
but here's some free tickets, or like, no, maybe next time. But like there's some really rude no's, and I feel like I got like two or three of those this summer that I was just like, wow, people are really mean. Like, I don't want to deal with that again, at least for the rest of the year. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a weird thing, especially when you're in this game, like just interviewing or having to meet different personalities and people, like mm-hmm. it's hard sometimes to navigate. But I mean, at the end of the day, you'll get a better understanding of people and at least how to navigate through those negative or, yeah, you know, it's,
yeah, and it's different too for like a girl, like,
yeah, yeah.
And I feel like also like I want to focus on doing content. I feel like I've gained enough experience mm-hmm. to talk about my experiences, so maybe like I know I've seen like a lot of TikToks of people like just like how I started doing this, so yeah. Like, you know, I'm not a pro by any means, but I just feel like I've experienced enough to be like, hey, y'all, heads up, if you want to do this, you know, like, not in a bad way, like, oh, you're going to come across bad things, but just like, oh, like, this really helped me. Because I feel like I'm like that, like, just in general, like, just really like, oh, like, I don't want people to go through some of the stuff I went through. So, like, let me share and make it, like, better. Also, like, the BHAC is a really great space. So, shout out to the BHAC. So, I would love for more people to, like, know about the space and like the resources that are available there. Like, you should definitely have a show there, like, if you're interested in that.
I'm not to look into that.
Yeah, more of course.
I just gotta cut down on my swearing.
Honestly, like, yeah, it happens. It's okay. I'm always like, I'm gonna beep this, and I never beep it.
So. Yeah, no, I will have to work on that. But no, that's definitely interesting. And again, it's cool that these resources are available for people who are interested in going into these fields, you know?
Yeah.
When I first met you a few weeks ago at the Cella Arts Fest, I had a zine myself that just kind of went through the steps of starting a podcast, just working with what you have. And then, you know, going back to my personal experiences, like I started recording podcasts back in 2013, you know, and out of my Corolla, I was in my car, iPhone, have my guest sitting down next to me. And, you know, in my, we were just doing stuff. We were just getting a little faded in there. But you know, we were having a badass conversation, and at the end of the day, it produced a podcast that I was at least comfortable enough to start releasing, whether the quality was good or not. And it just kind of made me start becoming more comfortable, and eventually, and now I'm in this space, you know, like, and I've been traveling, my equipment's been improving, it's been upgraded, and you know, it's just those things that you start off really scared of first, and you're like, and now you're here, you're like, it's not that bad.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Look at your space. It's really cool.
Yeah, no, shout out to everybody who's put into this, you know, Mirage, Mezcal, everybody at East of the River Network. You know, it's been a fun ride here as well. But again, they're creating, you're creating, I'm creating something that can motivate people to continue their passions, or at least start pursuing them, you know, like just break from the routine that we're all kind of sucked into, you know, just by force through society, and find a way to kind of mitigate that by chasing our dreams, you know?
Yeah. And I was looking at like some of the people you've previously like interviewed, and I feel like they're all from like our hood, like mm-hmm. East or Southeast LA. And I think it's also very important to see people from our community, like just pursuing something creative. Cause I know like, at least, I don't know, like I know like my parents, or at least my mom, like at creative jobs, like, and who, yeah, mind you, she is a very creative person. Like, she grew up like sewing a lot and creating like a lot of garments for like us, but like, it's not, I don't think they see it as like a viable like income,
yeah,
and stuff like that. So I think it's really important to, I don't know, like see that. And even if it's just like your peers doing it. And I, for me, it's really inspiring. Like, I know, like, when I was in high school, like, the creative kids, like, we all gravitated towards each other. And I feel like it's been, like, almost 10 years now. And, like, seeing us still pursuing, like, creative stuff is, like, really important. Like, I don't know. I know, like, it's very few, which is kind of, like, whack. But it's really cool to see, like, oh, they're still doing music. Yeah. Or, like, she's still uploading, like, her art. And that's, like, really cool to see. And so I'm really a big fan of like some of the artists that you've interviewed that are from like the community. So
yeah, no, I mean, we got to bring each other up. I mean, I in the previous podcast, I was kind of briefly talking about my graphic design experience growing up and just kind of having to build a portfolio to kind of obviously get money, you know, like.
And nobody tells you that.
Yeah, exactly. I had a bad experience with somebody that I was looked up to, and you know, they gave me completely horrible feedback, like about my work. And, you know, it motivated me to keep going regardless of what their intentions were with that. But the idea is that, you know, you get started on a skill, you kind of have to go through it.
No, but it's different. I feel like I had a miserable time at UCLA, but it was weird. Like a lot of things that upset me were like, you know, when they make you like introduce yourself in the first day of class or whatever. And a lot of my like, what is it called? Like, classmates would always say like, oh, and this is the first public school I'm attending. And I'm like, why in the hell would they even say that? Like, it was just very weird for me. And then I realized like, oh, like they're all from like private schools, you know. And like those random like one-off like art classes I would take, like I realized that like these kids knew what was up. Like they knew about portfolios and how applying to schools, and like they've been working on their craft since like ever. Like they were always supported with it. And that, like, to me, I was just like, what? Like, I'm just finding out that like,
exactly,
this is possible. Like I would look in, cause I was always looking like, what other, like, I don't know, what can I major in, and everything you needed to like test into it or like have a portfolio. And I'm like, dude, I don't have any of that.
Yeah, exactly. And it kind of scares you because you're like, do I even belong here? Like, do I fit here?
I know. Like, do I have time? Like, yeah. Was I supposed to start like 10 years ago?
Yeah. So I remember my point where I was saying like with the graphic design stuff, like nobody really wanted to give me a chance at the beginning, right? So the reason this podcast was motivated was because I wanted to be able to network with people and just kind of at the same time bring my skills up into light, you know? And with that, it allowed me to bring people who were also in the same positions who have a skill or a passion to grow. And I was like, you know what? Let me bring these people up. You know, maybe they need an opportunity to come in and talk about their thing to be able to start growing in their stuff. And that's how I kind of started seeing it from the beginning, which is why I kind of like bringing or keeping the podcast. It goes out, you know, every now and then outside of sellout, but for the most part, keeping it within the home base to kind of bring everybody up, you know, showcase that that skill, those passions.
Yeah, no, I feel that. And yeah, I feel like, I don't know, like, for example, I recently went out with like friends I haven't seen since high school. Mm-hmm. And they're like, they were so like, oh my God, like you're doing all these like things. And like, for you, I imagine too, like, you're just doing it. You're not really thinking about it. You're just like, well, honestly, in my perspective, like, I'm just reaching out. Whoever says yes, I just do like that interview. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I really get starstruck but for the most part, like, I'm not. Like, I'm just like, oh, it's just like two humans having conversations. But you forget that like people are watching your stuff and people are like genuinely like want to listen and like rooting for you. And then you're like, oh, like, yeah, I guess. And it's really even cooler when it's like people from your community that have known you like before you were even doing this stuff that are just like really excited for your work. And it's just like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I know. It does hit like a nice string in your heart. You're like, oh, that feels, thank you. You know, like, I'm being acknowledged for what I'm doing. You know, not that you need it. At least me, I don't need the compliments. But every now and then I'm surprised when somebody takes their time out of their day to send me a message and tell me like, hey, like, keep going. It's like, oh, dang. Yeah. Like, you know, it's sometimes hard for people just to reply. Like, they leave you unseen, or you read the message, you don't care, come back to it a few days. But, you know, so to me, it's important when somebody actually takes the time to sit down, type up a few words out of their day to be like, hey, I like it, you know? And it's like, damn, thanks. And it really comes from a place, I feel like, that's honoring what you're doing, you know?
Yeah. No, I feel that. And shout out to my friend Elisa from high school, because, like, she used to fangirl over like One Direction. And like, I'm pretty sure she's totally forgotten about that.
Yeah.
But it's like stuff like that, like growing up, that I think for me, seeing that, I was like, oh, like, I mean, I obsessed over bands too. But like, just seeing that, I'm like, oh, like people really appreciate like music and like the music scene. And that's something that like really stuck with me after high school and like into college. And yeah, I feel like stuff like that for me was really important. Shout out to my mom too, who like is the biggest Elvis Presley fan. And I think that's where it started for me, just like appreciating artists and like also like the fandom behind it. Like fangirls get a really bad rap, but it's like, dude, they're the ones buying all the merch, you know? So to me, like I started off as a fangirl and it just led on to me being like, as a fangirl, like, what do I want to see? And it's just like, oh, like this type of content, you know? And it's just like, but like a Latina doing it, you know? So yeah, like going back to the Quiero Mosh, but yeah.
That's so cool. And honestly, that's so cool. There was, I don't know if you ever had the chance to see this spot, but it was the Allen Theater in Southgate.
No. Everyone, yeah, it's always like, yeah.
Yeah, no.
If I was a billionaire, I would like totally bring that place back.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I would support anybody who tries to do that. But it was honestly one of the coolest spots in Sela at that time. Like I got to experience it during my high school years, like in 2004, 2008 or something. It was really fun. It was chaotic, but it was very a very raw look into the creative community, like that was creating music out of whatever we could. Whether it was like, you know, you were talking about the professor who was saying that who do the archive stuff. Mm-hmm. These bandmates will get together to start ska bands or punk bands. You know, I was part of the people who were like, I was a bass player, like my, you know, curly ass hair, tight ass pants, like pretending to play punk.
He's playing air bass right now.
Yeah, I'm playing air bass, guys. But you know, it was just a really cool time, and for a while that scene kind of died in Sela. Mm-hmm. And it was very unfortunate, but it looks like now it's kind of coming back. Like the people are starting to embrace the music again. It's beautiful, honestly.
Yes, and shout out, now that you're speaking about that, shout out to Chiquex Roquerex, which is a girl or like a youth rock camp that like just focuses on like, I mean, I guess in its core, it's like teaching the youth like music in 1 week or whatever. But honestly, it's more like empowering like the trans youth, the gender expansive youth, and just like creating a community and safe space. Because I know like the music scene, especially like in the pandemic, we saw how it's not, and in general, it's like not a safe space sometimes, but like, yeah, creating safe spaces in our community and for the youth, and like, that'll like, you know, transcend into future generations. And so shout out to them, follow them at Chiquex Roquerex Sela. I'm running their socials too. So yeah, nice. But yeah, that's more music related stuff happening in Southeast LA.
Nah, that's awesome. Well, I mean, with that being said, Melina, thank you so much for taking the time to come out on The Social Primate.
Of course.
For people to find your show, find out about the stuff that you're doing and the future stuff that you're going to be uploading on YouTube, where can people find you?
Yes. If you don't follow me already, please do so at Te Quiero Mosh. Follow KQBH LA, which is the radio station. They have so much more programming with other radio hosts, with a plethora of like topics and other genres. You can, what else can you follow? I don't know. I think that's it. Oh wait. Okay. I think my YouTube channel is going to be called Quiero Mosh TV. So keep an eye out for that. And yeah.
I like it. Quiero Mosh. Like I want Quiero Mucho TV.
Yeah. You know?
It's funny. I honestly, it's a badass name. So
thank you. It was like a play on like, what was MTV Tres?
Yeah,
I feel MTV like they had something like that too.
Yeah, because that was like the Spanish or Latin alternative of their MTV regular.
Yeah,
TV,
but probably. It was also like, it was Trey. It was never like three. It was like French, which means more.
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I know it's so nerdy, but yeah.
Melina, thank you so much for taking the time again.
Of course. Thank you so much.
And then we'll see you next time.
Yeah. Bye, y'all.
Have a good night, everybody. Thank you.